Go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! And here we go, a second night on the front porch, two in a row, this being the usual installment. It's Friday, the 25th day of November 2016. This is The Horn, headonradionetwork.com is where we live. That's where you go if you want to jump into the chat room, where you will be met by a whole host of Horn Family Community Congregation members, including but not limited to Jug of Punch, Laborman, Snort, Steve from Georgistan, Will in Chicago, and many more to come as the program proceeds. You will also be capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who is leaving space the way it is and not folding it this evening, and not quite so longtime veteran, occasionally fatigable, veteran chat room moderator Texas Betsy. So sorry, I have to think through that, right? Yeah, but anyway, it is Friday on the front porch. We'll get that started in about 57 minutes or so, and I encourage you, if you've never participated before, to send a contact request on Skype to Sparky Dunk, SparkyDunc, Sparky Dunk on Skype. And he'll show you the breadcrumb trail to get into the Horn Malloy Skype chat group, the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable being a very, very unique and almost, well, that unique kind of covers it. I don't have to work the language. It's a unique thing in broadcasting where people, where we engage in roundtable conversation based on the expertise of workaday Americans working a day. Right. Yeah. So that's where we go. That's yeah. If you would like to support the program, we need your support. We badly need your support. This is one of the biggest broadcast bargains in the country. Thank you very kindly to Peg in the sandbox. Peg helped out overnight, given the time difference. Got a note from Peg. She said, I'm extremely thankful for HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. I had lost track of U.S. issues over the many years we've lived outside the U.S., but your network over the past 3 years has re-engaged me politically, environmentally, and historically, and I thank you and Dr. Bill. Dennis and I had a great Thanksgiving Day, the usual U.S. food, along with a boat race on the Arabian Gulf, an aerial show for the upcoming National Day with an awesome display of the British Red Angel jets. Formula One tourists in for that start of events on Friday. Families sitting on the beach. This is the way all countries in the region should be run. Lordy, I got the much-awaited download for Sinclair Lewis's This Can't Happen Here, and this is a book all should read. I'm not sure whether to be filled with dread or a hint of hope that in the U.S. it'll never happen here. And lastly, on a funnier note, I heard or read somewhere that the fake news bots sent out an all-caps headline, if you voted for Trump, you don't need to file U.S. taxes, and the uninformed believed it. Wouldn't that be delightful, having the IRS after them? Well, have a great day. We'll have a great day with your family on Saturday. Love, Peggy. Thank you, Peggy. Thank you very, very kindly. And Thanks for the kind note and the help you provide in keeping the horn on the air. Thank you very much indeed. Thank you to Harold, President and CEO of the
Happy Trails Open. Secret Open Carry Happy Trails Roundup Society. I had Sotstris. It spells Sotstris. Secret Open Carry Happy Trails Roundup Society. Harold has a contribution on the table that will go a long way toward, if it's matched, that will go a long way toward making bill paying as we run toward the end of the month considerably simpler. So, you know, we try to, like I said, there's $220 on the table, and we will hopefully get that matched in the next 3 hours or so. 10 at 22, 22 at 10, 1 at 220, 2 at 110, 220, 225, whatever it takes. I just love that scene from Mr. Mom. It's one of those perfect little comedic moments. So you're going to wire it for 220, 220, 225, whatever it takes. Scotch? Yeah, no, you want a beer? It's 7:30 in the morning. Scotch? Yeah, I love that. Note coming in, Thanksgiving wishes from Steve, a member of the fraternity of Steve in China. Just have to get there, that's all. There it is. Subject line, count your blessings, temper your history. Well, Thanksgiving as a federal holiday began in 1863 and was something like old Abe's appeal to a once-and-future union on the verge of utter non-existence. A celebration of the traditional harvest festival that was enacted by proclamation in 1789, courtesy of George Washington. The Pilgrims first celebrated in 1621. Apparently they saw fit to thank their God for military victory, as for a drought-free planting season. Some things never change. I had a wonderful Turkey Day feast with colleagues the other night, sans the turkey, and other trappings that make it so special when I'm back home. Turkey? Though I had been so provident as to have acquired my grandmother's recipe for dressing, an experience, a wonder, and a bliss that haunts my soul more than my taste buds to this very day. God bless us all. Happy Thanksgiving to you and yours. Regards, Steve in China. That came in about 7 o'clock this morning. Thank you, Steve. Thank you very kindly. Lovely note coming from Sylvia. Sylvia said, thank you for devoting your holiday evening to providing another stimulating front porch episode. As I sit here replete with my dinner digesting, I wish you and yours a delicious dinner on Saturday when you finally get to enjoy it with your family. I vote you, and this is a separate topic, I vote you don't go to the protest site, the Dakota Access Pipeline site in North Dakota. Even with the best of intentions, others don't value your welfare as much as your extended family does. Would that we could clone you or deputize someone to carry that reporting task forward. Your caller, she's speaking about Kevin Gilbert, seemed to be doing a yeoman job endeavoring to present info as it came. Mangia turkey. Sylvia. Thank you, Sylvia. And the discussion does continue as to whether or not to head out to Standing Rock. Joe writes in, this is a great show Thursday, Bob. I vote that you go to the water protectors. It would be nice to get high-quality video and or audio. Regards from the Great White North in Wisconsin. Wisconsin. Conzin. C-O-N-Z-I-N. Wisconsin. So we'll just kind of keep the conversation going on that. It's running about half and half. It's the clash, you know, should I stay or should I go? And like I said, it's running about halfsies. So that pretty much takes care of the preliminaries, I think. I really would like to just get back to something resembling normalcy as far as programming material, but God dang it, the economic anxiety just keeps breaking out. It broke out Wednesday afternoon, according to WDAY-TV. It broke out Wednesday afternoon in Minnesota. Mm-hmm. Moorhead School District. In particular, students of Horizon Middle School They were on their way home about 4:15 p.m. when the bus driver got wrought, I guess you could say. He pulled over in an industrial park, a place that had no sidewalks, and he made all his children get off the bus. Deshauna Dotson, a student who was on the bus, said, "You guys can get off my bus and walk home. I'm not driving you guys home." She said it was kind of in a scary area, too. He called us the N-word when we got off the bus. He called two children the N-word. The rest of the children he simply referred to as assholes. The economic anxiety takes its toll. The superintendent of the Moorhead schools said, "We did find that there were students that were misbehaving on the bus. I think the bus driver just kind of got fed up." And, you know, that happens. Children, middle schoolers, I mean, this was a middle school, right? They're a handful. Middle schoolers are a handful for their parents. Middle schoolers are a handful for their teachers. It's a tough time. It's a transitional time in a child's life from sort of infancy toward adolescence. And it's the cusp between infancy and adolescence. It's dreadful. I doubt if there's anybody in the Horn Family Community Congregation who, given the opportunity, would say, "Oh, sure, I'd love to be a seventh grader again." It's just awful. And so, you know, I guess bus drivers get fed up. And just, it's understandable, I guess, that they would just dump their children in the middle of an industrial park and call a couple of them that word and the rest of them assholes and just drive away, because that's what he did. Because children were misbehaving on the bus and the bus driver got fed up. The bus driver has not been identified. Lynn Kovash went on to say, "Transportation on the bus is a privilege. It is not a right of a student to have transportation on a bus. So one of the things coming out of this is we need to investigate those students that were involved in this." Yes. Why did the two middle schoolers force the bus driver to call them the N-word and the rest of them assholes? Why did they do that? Why did they compel that driver did they actually move his mouth and make his tongue wag to cause him to use that vulgar slur? Or, of course, was he just, you know, economically anxious? Meanwhile, Deshauna's mother, Stacy, said, "If you can't control yourself for the little time you do drive the bus, then you shouldn't be working there. At no point, even if the children were bad, should they have been called any racist name." Well, maybe that was true in the past. But it is not true in Trump-merica. Trumpmerikka. The greatest great country in the history of the world on earth, in the universe, today, now, forever. Amen. MAGA. Yeah. And, I mean, there's no doubt that middle schoolers can be assholes. Adults can be. I mean, where's the cutoff? Because I think there really is. There's an intellectual line of demarcation. I mean, do we think of a four-year-old? I'm just, you know, this is just a thought experiment. Do we look at a four-year-old and go, asshole? Okay, no. Six-year-old, asshole. No. Sixth grade? Yeah, I mean, I remember being one. You know, I put up with some bullying when I was a kid. And I remember being in sixth grade and yeah, asshole. So it's somewhere around fourth, fifth grade. Maybe third. When do little humans start being mean? Are there mean newborns? Are there mean toddlers? I mean, we know about the terrible twos and the terrifying threes. But we tend not to think of a tantrum-throwing toddler as an asshole. And no, this is not merely an exercise in me attempting to find out how many times I can use that word. Because if it was, I would have said asshole again. Oops. I mean, but in Trump-merica, you know, we just kind of overlook, I guess we just kind of overlook it when the bus driver calls a couple of students that hateful racist word. Now, see, there's a perfectly rational response from Snork. Hello, I drove a bus for a year after the automotive industry crashed in 2008. I personally believe there should be someone on the bus in charge of the kids other than the driver. The bus driver needs to drive without the distractions of the kids. Eminently reasonable and rational. Of course, it would also cost money. And remember, the Amway lady is going to be in charge of the Department of Education in the United States. She'll have those little assholes out there hustling laundry detergent before we know it. I mean, when you've got the Amway lady, I was talking to my buddy Rick Smith earlier today. When you've got the Amway lady, and he made this remark, and I thought it was both clever and apt and funny and terrifying. When you've got the Amway lady running the Department of Education, how long is it before David Duke gets nominated to be head of the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission? Yeah, he's not here or anything, but we're gonna give an in absentia to Rick Smith for that. Because, yeah. So, and of course, once again, this is one of those subcontracted busing companies. The same way it was in Chattanooga. Turns out there's a lot of states that have subcontracted out their busing. This was Red River Trails. God, that kind of needs the wah, wah, wah behind it, doesn't it? Red River Trails. Apparently, the bus driver will no longer drive for Moorhead Schools. Meanwhile, school officials say, we don't know if the driver was fired or disciplined by his employer. You know, because why would a school district want to know if one of its bus drivers had been fired or disciplined by the employer for, you know, calling a couple of kids that vile, vulgar, filthy term and the rest of the kids, you know, assholes? It's just, you know, economic anxiety. Meanwhile, you remember the economic anxiety that broke out in West Virginia that caused the head of the Clay Development Corporation to refer to First Lady Michelle Obama as an ape in heels? It's apparently spreading. Nah, it's not spreading. It's been there all along. It's just sort of bubbling over because see the Trumpansies are real excited because, and it's driving them crazy because because that one is still in our White House, and they still have to acknowledge that the Kenyan Muslim usurper is president of Merca. And as we draw nearer and nearer to inauguration day, they become more and more angry and frustrated because they just want to make America great again. And he's holding back the greatness. Why can't he just resign and let America be great? So the economic anxiety bubbled over the top of the stew pot in Talabama. Enter June Pridemore. She's a longtime employee of an outfit called Regions Bank. It's a bank, and it's in Regions. That's why we call it Regions Bank. June Pridemore said in a Facebook post, "I voted him in. I like him. He has a beautiful wife, unlike the ugly and embarrassing woman, for lack of a better word, in the White House now. Ms. Trump's face would make Michelle Obama sick." Michelle, that's one L, like Michelle Bachmann, and that gets us sick, S-I-C. Obama, she spelled O as if they are Irish. Well, they kind of, there's a little Irish. O, apostrophe, capital B-A-M-A. Just like you spell Talabama, T-A-L-A, apostrophe, B-A-M-A. Ms. Trump's face would make Michelle Obama a Sunday face. I'm certainly glad he has a lot of money, because he won't be bought out like Barack, socialist Muslim Obama, or his wife, or all those host of relatives they have in the White House for us to support. If any idiot out there thinks that is justified, she started having a hissy about having their dog on with the Obamas having their dog with them on vacations. If any idiot out there thinks that is justified, you deserved him as president. I prefer a man who can buy Michelle and Barack and sell them several times over. I see. It just economic anxiety. You know, she didn't mean nothing by it, talking about a white man buying and selling a black man and a black woman. I mean, happened all the time in Talabama back before everything went sideways 156 years ago. Mm-hmm. Senior Vice President of Loan Operations since 2008. Now, folks apparently didn't take kindly to June Pridemore's economic anxiety. A spokesperson for the bank, Jeremy King, ran right out and said, "We appreciate the concerns shared about offensive social media comments that were made through an associate's personal Facebook account. We want you to know that we share those concerns. Those comments do not reflect our values as a company or the way we do business. The associate is no longer an employee of the company." Mm-hmm. So, goodbye, June Pridemore. Your economic anxiety just got a lot worse. At least she didn't call Michelle an ape in heels. And, of course, the story is accompanied by a photo of the lovely June Pridemore. Brother Deacon Gerald pointing out, getting back to the story in Minnesota, riding the bus may not be a right, but as long as I'm writing that check to the sheriff's office every year to keep the property that I own, I'm pretty sure my kid's entitled to ride it. Yep. Yep. Gerald noticed the whole buy and sell the Obamas thing. Then, of course, economic anxiety broke out in Pittsburgh. Yep. Fellow was sitting at the bar at the Red Robin restaurant in South Hills Village Mall. I've been there. It's a nice mall, as far as malls go, if you think malls are nice. Mm-hmm. The man sitting working on his tablet computer and wearing earbuds at the Red Robin Bar in South Hills Village Mall was named Ankur Mehta. He is of South Asian descent, the Indian subcontinent. Ankur Mehta is not a Muslim, neither. No. But, you know, if you look different from white Americans, you're probably Muslim. So they're sitting next to him at the Red Robin restaurant bar in the South Hills Village Mall in near Pittsburgh. It's on the other side of the mountains from the... But yeah, you got to go through the tunnels. And my God, it's the best view of a city. It's the best opening view of a city in the country. You're driving, it's hills, it's countryside, it's mountain, and then you pop through the tunnel, and there's this big, beautiful city just laid out in front of you with the two rivers forming the third, and it's gorgeous. I used to think that the view of Atlanta as you were driving east on I-20 from Birmingham to Atlanta, you top a little hill, and there sits all this green forested area, and Atlanta rises up out of it with these beautiful glass and concrete spires. I thought that was pretty impressive too, but no, the view of Pittsburgh's something. But anyway, never mind that's tourism. So sitting there at the bar is 54-year-old Jeffrey Burgess, who is getting himself properly tanked. And he looks over at Ankur Mehta and said, "Things are different now. I don't want you sitting next to me, you people. You sand nigger. You fucking Muslim." And then punched him in the face with his elbow and his fist because economic anxiety. Of course, it was a sucker punch. Apparently, the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania has a statute, a criminal statute called ethnic intimidation, because he was charged with it, and simple assault and harassment and public drunkenness. The Council on American Islamic Relations, CARE, who speaks out against anti-Muslim bias, even when the people being subjected to it aren't, you know, Muslim, issued a statement. They said, "Our political leaders need to speak out against such breakdowns in social order, apparently inspired by reckless rhetoric during the election cycle." Reckless rhetoric. They're just, that's not reckless rhetoric. That's MAGA. Some MAGA broke out in the Red Robin Bar in the South Hills Village Mall in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Just making America great again. One sucker punch and one elbow at a time. Mm-hmm. Because freedom. Because MAGA. You betcha. Like I said, I keep hoping we can just have... Well, what, Angry? Angry just sent me a message and said, that's all? Ethnic intimidation, simple assault, harassment? Angry asks, if it was a white male being insulted and attacked by a non-Euro settler, what would the assailant be charged with? Attempted murder? Terrorism? Oh, yeah. It'd definitely be terrorism. That line about things have changed and I don't want to sit next to your type, that would be terroristic threats. But Angry, you gotta cut Jeffrey Burgess some slack. He's got a lot of economic anxiety. All we have to do is go and out there and look and they'll tell you. There's just a lot of economic anxiety. And it makes people do economically anxious racist things. Gerald notes, too bad that asshole wasn't sitting beside Mr. Pulliam from Charleston, West Virginia. He could have defended himself. That's true. By the way, other media outlets, like I said, are picking up the Mr. Pulliam story from Charleston. And... yeah, it's still as awful as it originally seemed. But he'll have a bond hearing. He's charged with first-degree murder. That's the only crime with which you are for which you are not entitled to a reasonable bond. God, I hope this man doesn't get out. He's liable to go and experience some more economic anxiety there. And somebody's liable to get dead again. Sheesh. Mm-hmm. Just looking for some... Just looking for some normalcy. Searching. Hey, wow, I'm just watching the chat room here. Stockton Larry in the chat room notes that he was in the ATL during the 88 Democratic National Convention. I was there too, Larry. Yes, I was. At the fabulous CNN Center. Mm-hmm. It's a very interesting time. Hey, Larry, do you remember the woman outside the convention who was selling the buttons and the T-shirts and everything that said "Die Yuppie Scum"? I'd go walking in and I'd hear her on the sidewalk, "Die Yuppie Scum, Die Yuppie Scum, get your buttons, get your hats, get your T-shirts, Die Yuppie Scum." Angry notes, so when we say mighty white of you, not meaning you, me, you understand what we mean. It's not just a line from the Jeffersons. It's an admission of, as Kissinger would say, real politic. Uh-huh. Gerald says economic anxiety makes people do desperate things, huh? Where were all these people with economic anxiety when we actually had it in 2008? Well, America was still great back then because the Kenyan Muslim usurper hadn't yet gotten into our White House. So there wasn't, because economic anxiety has to have a catalyst, you see. Let's see, note coming in from Smitty saying, Bob, please don't go to North Dakota. I'm too scared. Hmm. Well, I guess it could be a fear-inducing situation. 25 minutes before the hour, and yeah. Like I said, just looking for something that feels like normal. And lo and behold, I guess maybe we found it. Something to remind us that, you know, just everything isn't gone complete. Well, wait, we've still got more economic anxiety we have to deal with. Mm-hmm. This outbreak of economic anxiety came from Florida at the Publix, the grocery store there. In which an economically anxious white guy has a hissy over line standing. A pathetic family at Publix cut me in line at the deli and started acting belligerent and yelling racist remarks when I stood up for myself, telling them I was waiting there first. I was here before them. Look at this guy. Look at this. There's a video. Look at this guy. Look at this guy. Look at these racists. A young woman simply looks at the man and says, "Get your fucking camera out of my face." After a while, the manager of the Publix shows up and says he's not allowed to film on private video on private property. "Yes, I am. This is America. It's freedom of the press. I'm protecting myself from people like them who almost assaulted me." Almost assaultedly. Almost put him in fear of receiving an insulting or unconsented to touching. Almost. Which is the same as they didn't. Then he goes whining to a man. "That dark-skinned guy, he cut in line in front of me. His daughter tried to assault me." What were we saying about middle schoolers earlier? Some of them never get out of their adolescence. Davie, Florida. Then he tried to involve the cops in it. Well, just, for the hell of it, just check it out. Shall we? Maybe? Possibly? Don't know?
Look, I was here before him. 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 She just called me a cracker. Look at this guy. Look at this guy. Look at this guy. Look at these racists.
You told me F me.
No, I said I was fucking. No, I said I was fucking right there. I said I was right there, buddy. Don't touch me. Hey, don't touch me. Don't touch me. That's assault. That's assault. She almost touched my camera. Don't touch me. You almost touched me. Come on, buddy. Come on. I have the right to film. You guys are crazy racists.
Crazy racists? You're a racist.
I'm not saying anything. Look at you. Look at you. Look at you. Look at you. Excuse me. Could you call me the manager, please? Okay. Look at these guys. Look at these guys. I was waiting here first. I was waiting here first. Doesn't matter if I pulled the ticket or not. You know, you get it. Look at this guy. They're still bitching about it. Look at these guys. Still bitching about it.
Jesus God. Because, you know, lunch meat. Because they were going to get the last of, like, the pickle and pimento loaf, and it doesn't matter if I've got a ticket. I don't have to have a ticket. It's kind of the essence of white privilege there, isn't it? I don't need to stand in line. I mean, I was here first. You got to admit it, that there's a little bit of irony, but at Thanksgiving season, the guy like that saying, "I was here first, you bird." Mm-hmm. the grocery store. Somehow or another, these goddamn Trumpansies have politicized everything. You go to... was he just not raised right? Is this because mama didn't teach him to, you know, it be patient, son?
Oh, I want my baloney. My baloney has a first name. It's O-S-C-A-R. I want my baloney. I want my baloney right now. Give me my baloney or I'll burn this place to the ground.
Oh, Jesus. I know. But, you know, there's hope. Some things don't change. Some things do show us that there's continuity in this world. Or in this country. The greatest country in the history of the world on earth, now, today, forever in the universe. Great again. Under God. Amen. Freight on board. COD. Mm-hmm. Texas Betsy says, no, Bob, this is not middle school, this is pre-K. But I thought we agreed that we didn't think that the little toddler types were assholes. It's so confusing. Angry says, welcome to my fucking world. I know. So, note coming from Larry. I love hearing your take on driving out of nowhere and the view coming up on Pittsburgh, PA and Atlanta, GA. I bet they're almost as nice as the out-of-the-woods, over-hillside, out-of-nowhere view of the entire city of Portland, Oregon, and the Columbia Gorge. That I have not seen. That sounds pretty impressive. It's the whole out-of-nowhere thing that kind of sets these things up. The only difference is that most of the people in the Pacific Northwest think a bit clearer than most of the nation, and for the most part do not nut completely up over phony white economic anxiety. Larry continues, I've noticed that a lot more brainwashed Trumpansy southern rednecks are also followers of the late-night alt-right undertoned UFO disinfo show Coast to Corporate Coast with George Snorri Bory. Oh my. You're right, shit's getting weird, but then I've seen it coming for a few years now. It's all part of the clearing of this disgusting dark disinformation info bores sludge report, and of course, Fox Fascist Organization of Xenophobes Energies. Fascist Organization of Xenophobes. That's Fox, F-O-X, yes. Oh, clever, Larry, clear. Jones and these idiots talk about the Illuminati and all this shit. Well, they have no clue. They're so stupid, they've elected the Illuminati to try and take out the Illuminati, just like these other idiots try to do all over the world, whether it's that idiot in the Philippines, puking Putin, or that crazy Ann Coulter-like bitch running in France, Marine Le Pen. Strap on, my man. It is going to be a wild twist and turn, double deception. Travolta and Nicholas face-off movie on acid. Peace, bro. Thanks, Larry. Hadn't thought of it that way. I try not to think about John Travolta movies because then I have to think about Scientology and then my thetans start acting up. But anyway, a little bit of normalcy. Sure, rub it in, Gerald. Rub it in. I'm eating pumpkin pie with Cool Whip on top of it. Is that normal enough? That's real normal. That's extra normal. But tomorrow, Granny's banana pudding with my little twist on it. Lorna Doone's not vanilla wafers. That's the start. you line the bottom and the sides of the pan with Lorna Dunes. Blank side up so that when you turn it out into a bowl, you've got the little Lorna Dunes saying Lorna Dune. Lorna Dune, La Lorna Dune. And then you layer in the sliced bananas. But then, instead of vanilla pudding, which is just so boring, or banana pudding, which is artificially flavored banana, and as my father always said, they have yet to come up with an actual artificial banana flavor that tastes like a banana. The only thing that tastes less like the thing it artificially is supposed to taste like is watermelon. Artificial watermelon. I don't know what that is, but it ain't watermelon. So, no. Not the way mine is. Mm-mm. Can't twist banana pudding. Too liquid for that. No. Because, see, that's the trick. You go, so you do the layer of bananas, nice and thick, and then you get the cookable packaged flan that you mix with milk, whisk it with milk, and then bring it lovingly and slowly up to the desired temperature so that it'll set up, and you pour the hot flan liquid over the top of the bananas, and then you hit it with more bananas, and then you top it off with more Lorna Dunes. You can go broke on the Lorna Dunes on this banana pudding. If you really want to just make it tropical as all hell, you can add in some crushed pineapple too. And even a little coconut. And then just chill it, and yeah, you can turn it out. And it's the boxes of flan come with its own little package of caramel, and you can drizzle the caramel over the whole affair, and then it's food porn is what it is. I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to it. Something fierce. Oh, it's gonna be good. Oh, Gerald, I forgot about use no forks, handle with care, no stopping or standing, team lift, and this end up. Well, this end up, a team lift, I'd forget that, yes. Normalcy. There's a little bit. Well, that's true too, Dogman. Dogman says, welcome to Birth of a Nation Redux. Yeah, I don't know. It's already grating on me. See what I did there? Grating? Make America great? Yeah, it's grating on me. Normal. We're looking for normal here. We're looking for typical. We're looking for something that shows us that the world is still turning properly on its axis, that the planet is still wobbling in its little ellipsoidal orbit around the sun, which in turn is moving in a sort of helical fashion through the galaxy, and the galaxy did normalcy, and there it is. Republican Mike Yenny, who is the president of a parish, which is the same thing as a county in Louisiana, he's been kind of caught. This is not economic anxiety. This is just plain old strange, kinky, sexually predatory conduct by a good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered Republican man. Mm-hmm. Turns out Mike Yenny sent a 17-year-old boy dirty text messages . 40-year-old Yenny met the 17-year-old boy at... Thank you, goddess of irony. Thank you. No, really. Whole crate of rubber chickens are going up in flames at midnight tonight. Thank you, goddess of irony. I just needed my world to be normal. 40-year-old Mike Yenny met the 17-year-old boy at his alma mater, and where the boy also went to school, Jesuit High School. And then they started dirty texting each other. And then 40-year-old Republican parish president Mike Yenny visited the 17-year-old boy where he worked at a local mall and brought him some sexy time underwear. Mm-hmm. And then after he presented the boy with the sexy time underwear, they kissed. And it's all completely legal because the age of consent in Louisiana Stan is 17. They're more enlightened. The age of consent in West Virginia is 16. You can get married earlier, but the parents have to do the consenting. Mm-hmm. So, here's the best part of it. There's a recall effort against 40-year-old Republican Mike Yenny. And describing it, Mike Yenny himself said, like in other words, what he's trying to say in his pleadings, he's a pedophile, he's an admitted homosexual, and that is not true. I've never admitted that. It doesn't define me either. Interviewed by New Orleans's Fox 8 News, he said, answered the question, what do you mean it doesn't define you? Mike Yenny replied, well, I'm not gay. Said the guy who bought a 17-year-old boy some sexy time underwear and did some mouth kissing, tongue wrestling with him. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But all is right with the world. All is normal. Because, Republicans are still kinky, mendacious, hypocritical, sex monkeys. Well, I mean, just because I stuck my tongue in his mouth doesn't mean I'm gay. And I couldn't help it. I saw the cute little undies, and I just thought he's gonna look so yummy in these. But I won't let that define me, because I just knew he'd look good, and it was just a kiss the way guys kiss. I mean, kissing. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Goddess of Irony. Thank you. Thank you so much. Tell it to the Marines, Asa. Asa says the food porn is getting obnoxious, for Christ's sake. Says the guy who sends me pictures of a turkey breast that he's wrapped in bacon and slowly smoked. I'm brokenhearted for you, Ace. All I was talking about was a little bit of dadgum banana pudding. That's really all I want tomorrow, is the banana pudding and the dressing. I mean, the turkey will be a bonus. See, gotta do some grocery shopping, gotta have the chicken broth and... Because, you really can't do the dressing upright if you're waiting for the turkey, because you got to have the pan drippings. Got to get biscuits and some French bread and cornmeal and eggs. Got to make sure there's plenty of sage. Ooh, fresh sage instead of the stuff in the, instead of the dry stuff. I'm getting excited. I truly am. Eggs? Yes, eggs. Gotta have eggs for the gotta have eggs for the deviled eggs and the and you gotta have eggs for the cornbread too. We're even taking the iron skillets with us. Oh, it's gonna be good. And I don't know, probably one each of the jellied and the whole berry cranberry sauce. Angry says all that pork's gonna fuck up your heart and arteries. Take care there. You don't have to be Jewish or Muslim to view swine as a bad food choice. Oh, angry. Bacon. I know, nitrates and all of that stuff, but you know, don't eat it all the time. God, it's good when it's. So, besides, I said turkey, angry, not pork. Turkey. But, by the way, turkey bacon is not bacon. It just isn't. So it's about 3 minutes before the hour. Remember, Harold from the secret Open Carry Happy Trails Roundup Society has a $220 challenge on the table this evening. And it would be awfully, awfully nice to have that met. It's time to fire up the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable for Friday on the front porch. Jump in if you've never participated before. It's a great big load of fun. Good conversation. Ha ha ha, I see what you did there, Gene. News Ninja Gene said, is there any normalcy or post-normalcy? Ha! Yeah, I have a feeling we've got a whole new definition of normal coming. Maybe, throwing kids off buses and calling them that word. Maybe that's the new normal. Not the new normal. Thank you, Gene. Wait a minute. Post-normal. I remember when they declared that we were in post-racial America. They had no idea what they meant. Lord, Lord, Lord. So let's take a little break. Fire up the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. See what folks want to conversate about. All this food porn is getting me hungry. Oh, one last thing. Sparky sent me a screen cap a little bit ago. It was a dandy. It's a picture of Jill Stein signing her petition for a recount in Wisconsin. There was mention of this on National Petroleum Radio earlier this evening. I heard it as I ran downtown. Okay, I drove. They brought up the issue of the recount and the $5 million that Jill Stein's raised in a week to fund the recounts. And then whoever the for-profit media guy was who hosts it said, I talked to blah, 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 of the Daily Beast about this phenomenon. And so then they went to the tape. And the guy says, tell me about, and the National Petroleum Radio guy says, tell me about this recall, which of course can't possibly be anything real. There can't possibly have been any voter irregularities during the election, could there? And his guest from the Daily Beast said, why, heavens to Murgatroyd, no. And then talked about how hopeless the recount effort is. I mean, so, you know, let's not even try. I was reminded because Arnold sent me a note and said, I think Clinton's inaction on the election shows me that this is possibly a conspiracy of the right to win even though they lost. Well, why spend all that money on a recount when you're banking all those funds that you didn't spend away for your run for president in 2020? I'm not talking about Jill Stein, I'm talking about Hillary Clinton. Because you know. Oh, come on, Hills, you got this. You're not even going to be as old in 2020 as Bernie was when he ran this year. After 4 years of Trump, they'll be ready for you. And you can be the first woman president. I have a feeling a number of members of the Horn Family Community Congregation just had cold chills run up their spines. It did the same thing to me the first time I realized that was probably being said somewhere. So, and I mean, I would be perfectly happy to have her be president of the United States. I would feel a lot less anxiety. I got real anxiety, not the kind of economic anxiety that makes you spray paint swastikas on churches. I've got a lot of anxiety about this upcoming administration. And if there was some way for Hillary Clinton to be president instead of Hair Trump, I'll take it. But beyond that, I think we need a hashtag, Oh Hill No. Because, you know, Robbie Mook and that whole crowd of dead-end amateur political types, they're just itching. You know it. I mean, they live it. They breathe it. They're just itching to run in 2020.
You got this, Hills.
But Sparky sent me the picture of Jill Stein doing something useful and filing for the recount in Wisconsin. Apparently, they're going to go for a recount in Pennsylvania and Michigan as well. But the telling part of the picture is the comment from some wingnut under the story, you know, the Facebook post. We've filed in Wisconsin. Recount 2016 will begin next week. It is very clear now you are being funded by the Clintons to try this nonsense. You are nothing but a far-left, loudmouth socialist trying to push big government. Hillary lost. Trump is president. The people have spoken. See, the people with MAGA for brains think that Trump is already president. Hillary lost. Yeah, she lost by winning 2 million more votes than Hair Trump. Right. So there she is. Jill Stein, Clinton tool. Oh, my God. I mean, say what you will about Jill Stein. I don't think Clinton tool is one of those things. But I'm sure that there are people out there on our side. Damn right! I'll never trust her again!
Clinton trilateral imperial dynasty!
Yeah. Hey, thank you very kindly, Charlene. Charlene just kicked in to help meet Harold's Secret Open Carry Happy Trails Roundup Society Challenge. Thank you very much. That means we've got $165 to go on that challenge. Thanks a whole bunch for getting it started. So, yeah, break time. I got a little tune here. Naco and Medicine for the People. It's a lengthy song. We won't play all of it, but you can find it, N-A-H-K-O. N-A-H-K-O, Naco and Medicine for the People. The song is called Wash It Away. I hope to heck it plays. Because it's great playing and a darn fine message. Oh, really? Come on. All right, let's see if we can get it this way. Oh, this is so annoying. Someday. Nope, you can just stop that. Stop. Oh, this makes me nuts. All right, we'll try it over here. Oh, Jesus, please don't be letting me. No more internet problems. Not more delight. Not more frontier delight. No. Well, maybe that's the case. Maybe I'm going to have to hum. For pity's sakes. Right, this way. Sorry for the dead air, y'all. Dang it. Thanks, Jeremy. Loud and clear on TuneIn. Appreciate it. Thank you very kindly. This is just... Well, we'll try it this way. No, I can't do it that way, damn it. Angry says, besides the way pigs are raised these days, are they healthy? No. It's almost impossible to eat meat unless you raise it yourself. It's impossible to eat anything that's meat that's healthy. I understand that. These are just character failings of mine. I have this thing for hog jowl and ribs and sausage and bacon and ham, and now I'm just making myself hungry. Dirty gravy. Oh, my God, I love dirty gravy. I know, doesn't sound too appealing, but you know, you got to be there. This is absolutely ridiculous. Try anything? No, that wouldn't work either. That's just bizarre. So, hey, Sparky, do me a favor. Fire up the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable, and we'll just do this without a bumper. Because things ain't working real good. And I don't know why. We'll just do it that way. And the message has been received. Well, that was deeply frustrating, but good evening, Sparky.
Fire up the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable, and we'll just do this without a bumper.
Hey, I hear me twice. Are you there, Sparky? Sparky. Is any member of the group there?
I can barely hear you, Bob.
You can barely hear me?
Oh, now it's getting better.
Because, I mean, mic levels are what they... This is just a technologically weird evening so far. But you're there.
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, good. So, yeah, it usually works better coming out of a bumper, but, you know, it is Friday on the front porch, two nights in a row of front porch. Are you all nicely recovered? How is the soup? Tell me about the soup.
The soup was excellent. I just had a bowl before you, not 5 minutes ago, finished.
So did you make it, I mean, like with the leftover turkey breast or what?
Yeah, Judy made it.
Well, you know, hide not your light belt. What was in it? I mean, I got to know.
Carrots, onions, celery, mixed vegetables and noodles with the turkey.
No, I mean, tomatoes and stuff, or was it more like a poultry broth kind of thing?
No.
Well, a big bowl of it would come in nicely about now. Well, I'm seeing mentions here.
We can barely hear you, Bob.
Yeah, I know, and that's bizarre. I mean, there's nothing at all different from how it was, you know, last night. So I don't know what's going on. I mean, I can crank up the mic, but that peg, you know, that pegs everything on the streamer and on the... Do you hear me any better now?
Yeah, a little bit, but it's when you stop talking that we hear a white noise.
Well, there is, I mean, yeah, see, if I take the mic down to where you can't hear that, where the limiter catches it, then you can't hear me at all, right?
Barely.
Yeah. I have a feeling this is a Skype thing. Or an internet thing. I don't know. Okay, you want to try to... Sparky, let's try to reconnect, shall we?
Yeah. You want me to end call and start again?
Yeah, please, please. Because I'm having, I don't know. Maybe the internet's just gone to hell here, but it doesn't seem like that would affect volume. But yeah, let's try to redo this. This is it. Randy and PA just said, I tried to make a cloned backup, Bob, at the beginning of the week, and I'm a software engineer, but no avail. Tried for 3 days. So maybe that's what's going on here. I mean, I'm seeing good levels going out to the stream to the stream server. I got good levels on the board, and Skype's being weird. So I'm stymied. Just for the fun of it here, let's check one. Okay. Yeah, maybe it's a Skype thing. Let's see here. Let me just run a quick speed test and find out. Because this is really frustrating. Oh, better not do that. Get sued. Going nowhere fast. Okay, that kind of answers that question. Okay, thanks, Mike and Cascadia. All well on TuneIn. Darcy says loud and clear in Michigan. Is it just a Skype? Now, I think it's got something to do with our connection here. And I'm darned if I know why. Strange, and yeah. Good on Stitcher. Thanks, Smitty. Yeah, I got a feeling tech support's going to be a non-starter for the holiday weekend. Yeah, Jack noted in Shreveport, I can hear both you and Sparky fine. Turning up the mic got distortion. This was before the reconnect. I got nothing. Everything else is at normal. All right, try again. Okay, any better this time?
Yes.
Internet magic.
Internet magic.
And of course, I'm echoing.
Through other people here.
I don't hear an echo. But maybe that's just me.
So let's try this again, Friday on the front porch and all of that stuff. Because all
perfect.
All the broadcast stuff is fine.
You're coming in loud and clear now, Bob.
Yeah, and God knows why. I mean, mic settings are where they always go figure. How exciting. Well, okay, so happy day after Thanksgiving, everybody.
Happy Thanksgiving.
It's the Russians, Bob.
I just finished watching the college football game before this. I wasn't listening to it, just watching it.
Who was it?
Washington and Washington State.
Oh, the Apple Cup.
Yeah. Washington stomped Washington State. It was 45-17 or something like that.
And Mississippi, it used to be, I seem to remember that Mississippi and Mississippi State would play on the day after Thanksgiving, the Egg Bowl. But, you know, being a cord cutter now, it's kind of hard to keep up. Plus, you know, I'm still in I'm still in mourning over last week's debacle when Oklahoma came to Morgantown, just handed us our ass.
Yeah, but I was watching it on the internet, not on the cable.
Ah, well, but then again, I'm having internet troubles tonight. I'm out of the chat. I've been self-booted from the chat room. Okay.
I see that.
Yeah, let's go back in the chat room now. I mean, this is all just bizarre. Someday.
Gremlins, Bob.
Russian gremlins.
Well, I hear the Russians are working with Agent Fred, so, you know, what are you going to do?
He's Russian gremlin. Any opportunity to do my cheesy Russian accent, you know, I'll take.
Mm-hmm.
But, I'm trying to... No, the Mountaineers just stunk up the joint last Saturday, and it, broke my heart. But then again, I'm a Mountaineer fan. My heart was made for breaking.
Well, I don't usually watch that much, but since I was sitting here, I thought I might as well check out and see who was doing what.
Oh, I was going to mention something. You know, this is an unpaid product placement, but Margie worked until midnight last night, so I went over there to pick her up. My God, the parking lot of Walmart was like the staging area for the Normandy invasion. It was ridiculous. And everybody in there had a buggy full of towels, because towels were the big Black Friday thing at $1.68 a piece. You know, cloth, you know, bath towels and stuff. So, it was wild. But, you know, they're terrible. But I did run across a story. I mean, if you need, like, a good winter coat or even, you know, pants for deal, you know, like insulated pants for cold weather or whatever, even some sun gear. I'm getting to be a bigger and bigger and bigger fan of Patagonia. Really well-made stuff, kind of pricey, but get this. Patagonia declared that every penny it made today, so-called Black Friday, that they make in their stores and online, 100% of what they make today is going to grassroots environmental groups working to protect air, water, and soil. And here's one of the cool things. One of those grassroots groups is Cold River Mountain Watch. So just remember, when you shop Patagonia, when you wear Patagonia, you're actually helping out as a consumer, and I hate that word, in the struggle against mountaintop removal. I mean, it's nice to see a company actually doing something decent. President and CEO Rose Mercario said, during a difficult and divisive time, we felt it was important to go further and connect more of our customers who love wild places with those who are fighting tirelessly to protect them. The threats facing our planet affect people of every political stripe, of every demographic, in every part of the company, or in every part of the country. And so, everything they made today goes to grassroots. You know, they're not giving a bajillion dollars to, you know, the big greens. They don't need it. They're spreading the love out to the people who actually do the work. Continuing on, Ms. Mercario said, at Patagonia, we will grow and deepen our resolve to protect what we love. We will fight harder and smarter, and use every means at our disposal to prevail for the sake of the country, the planet, and the wild places and creatures that need our voice. Nice, huh? Anybody got any Patagonia stuff?
No.
I will have to go check them out.
Yeah, they've got on my only beef, if it is a beef, and it's, well, no, it's not a beef thing. It's more of a, but their stuff is cut more for really skinny hipster millennials than it is for 53-year-old environmental human rights campaigners. But that's on me, not on them. But it's great stuff.
So 65-year-olds would be out of the question, too.
Well, no, I don't necessarily think so. I mean, you're a svelte 65, are you not, Sparky?
Well, I don't know. I'll have to go check out their website. I don't know what they're talking about, what they make or what they sell. I shop by mail anyway.
Well, it's like, you know, down coats and insulated winter stuff and rain, waterproof things for, you know, it's outdoor gear.
I'm looking now, Bob.
Oh, I still got gear that, I mean, rain gear. I still got rain gear from my old company that works great. I mean, it's all yellow with the reflective tape and everything. It has M&J Electric on the back of it.
I just looked on the website, and I don't see that they have anything for the petite people like me who need sleeves that are a lot shorter.
Yeah, they've got, coats, you know, you can't get cold in their stuff. I mean, there's some good stuff out there. You know, Columbia's okay. REI.
Right,
but
you need normal size, normal length arms for their stuff. They don't have short people stuff.
Maybe if you write to them.
Maybe.
But, I just noticed that Thomas, Jug of Punch, just jumped in. Are you there, Thomas?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, welcome aboard.
Yeah, well, happy holidays, all. I hope you have a good dinner with your family tomorrow, Bob.
I'm really looking forward to it. I hope we can get out and get going quick.
Yeah. Well, enjoy. Hello, everybody.
Hey.
Hey, Thomas.
Hey, Jungle Punch. Good to see you, man.
Good to see you, too. Got an interesting time next 4 years. Boy.
Oh, yeah. And I saw what you emailed me about the CNN controversy. That kind of blew my mind.
Yeah. Chicken Little News at its finest.
Well, I mean, it wasn't really on them, was it? It seemed like it was on the cable company in Boston.
Yeah, but, you know, your partners are your partners.
Well, that's true. You can just ask the good rock-ribbed, rock-solid conservative Republicans about their new partners, you know, the Nazis. But, no, apparently, did I get the story right, Thomas? The cable provider actually accidentally ran how many minutes of porn?
30 minutes for Andrew, the cooking guy you like, Bourdain?
Yeah, it was supposed to be Anthony Bourdain's new episode premiere, and instead it was 30 minutes of
male porn or
transsexual
something like that.
Porn.
Okay. I'm not a connoisseur of it, so I'm not sure what you call it.
I'm just going by the news story myself.
Yeah. Oh, well, it is what it is.
CNN denied it, and then RCN, the cable company, denied it.
Those damn Russians, they hit us again, didn't they, Bob?
Yeah, probably.
Well, I got to give credit where credit's due for finding out about it. It was at Mock Paper Scissors, a place that Betsy knows about. He, you know, Tim Grain's been on top of this stuff forever.
Yeah. Yeah, I blogged there for about 3 years.
Yeah. So I just, I check it maybe once a week and go, whoa. Hey, he always has something that's just go, whoa, where did that come from?
Yeah. But, he's got a real nose for it.
Yeah, he has a whole flocking, he calls his scissors heads, and they just paired this stuff out. And, if it's out there, you're going to hear about it.
Betsy, you're echoing.
I just muted. Kai's hearing an echo, so I'm muting right now.
Okay, I'll mute.
The story from The Independent in the UK says viewers were apparently tuning in for a new episode of Anthony Bourdain's Parts Unknown, and the show's title took on an entirely new meaning when it was replaced with explicit material starring transsexual porn star Riley Quinn. The porn star eventually thanked the network for the reportedly free airtime. Dear God. But you know, just brazen it out, because the cable company then said, no, we didn't.
We have seriously fallen down the rabbit hole. I mean, we've already hit the bottom.
I wonder who did it, and why couldn't they have done it to Fox? Well, then again, it wouldn't be surprising, because you tune in to Fox, and it's just about softcore porn as it is. Oh, Jeremy in Vermont noted, I went by my local Hell Mart last night around 6:15, and it was on craziness, people leaving with carts full of sheets, 2 and 3 carts for some groups, and yeah, they were open all last night and today. Oh, there were lane backups in the checkout aisles at 12:30 last night. It was crazed.
And you say this was all for towels, Bob? Like bath towels?
Yeah, oh, people with buggies full of bath towels.
Losing their minds over bath towels. Good God, they're not even that expensive. Regular price, are they?
I mean, you go down to the Dollar General, you can get a good-sized fluffy white bath towel for, $3.
$3, yeah.
But it was on sale and Merca. And we're going to be great again with great new towels.
And I bet it wasn't made in America. I mean, trace the trail back. Who knows where it was made?
How many big ticket items did you see?
I saw a couple of TVs leaving.
Yeah. Samsung has a really cool looking concave TV. That
wrap around one looking thing.
Yeah, yes, sir. What do you think of that, Bob?
I don't know.
With my eyes and I'm getting old, how much clearer can it get? I mean, I'm at 720 DPI now, and I can't tell any difference between that and 1020. So, who knows?
Well, the clarity really is astonishing now, especially with the bigger TVs. Mm-hmm. If I had cable or something, I'd probably be jonesing over a 72-inch TV. But, well, no.
But my little bitty old house, I can't get that far back from the TV anyhow. So what difference does it make, you know?
Well, what really, and we forget about this, the big dramatic change is in, the difference between LED, LCD, and CRT. I remember... The biggest CRT TV we ever had was a 36-inch affair, and it took three people to carry it out of the car.
It weighed a ton.
And we couldn't and I had to bring it home in a pickup truck, because there was no way to get it through. It wouldn't even fit through the tailgate of the minivan back in the day.
Now was that a front projection? Do you remember those?
Oh, I remember that. No, this was a CRT. Yeah. I mean, this was just a TV. and you know, it was huge. And now 72-inch TVs weigh less than what a 28-inch TV did, you know, back in the day.
Wow.
I still got one of those big monstrosities.
Oh, do you?
Do you, Duncan,
not,
one of them?
Not in the living room. It's in Judy's bedroom.
One of them 700-pounders, you know?
I have one, too.
Yeah, it's on a big roll-around cart. She wants to get rid of it. She started...
I don't blame her.
The other day, she wants to get rid of it, so I have to find somebody that'll haul the damn thing off.
Is that the one with the prism in the front?
No, not this one. It's just a big Hitachi.
Does it have a tube? I mean, or does it have a flat?
It's got a tube. It's a big CRT TV. It belonged to my parent folks.
Yeah, I think that's where that team lift is going to come in handy that Gerald was talking about earlier.
One that played all the Fox News crap to him for years and years and years.
Oh, back in the day, it was the bomb. You know, you really had something 20 years ago.
The rear projection TVs that have that Fresnel lens in the front.
Yeah.
That Fresnel lens is still valuable after the TV is completely blown. It's so about a $200 Fresnel lens. If you mount it in the sun, it's capable of vaporizing concrete.
No kidding!
Wow,
it's excellent.
Don't say that to a radio audience of intensely curious people who would like to see concrete melt. Snork. There's some technology that was not safe for us.
There's a lot more worse things closer to your face.
Is that the one where the projection bulb costs as much as the TV itself?
Oh, it might be. It's a three-gun tube that's down below it.
Yep.
It used to be made in Franklin Park, Illinois, and I don't know if they're made anymore.
Yep, if you could even get one. But I can remember the bulb itself. If the bulb ever blew out, you were like, oh, my God, because you were just out... You know, close to a grand just to get a
kind of like what happens now with a car with a lithium ion, you know, not a lithium, with a battery in it. You know, what is it? I think replacing the battery in a Chevy Volt costs something like $15,000.
It's about $5,000.
No, that the $5,000 is the Prius.
Oh,
yeah.
Ouch. Man, that would set you back a few months on the mortgage, wouldn't it? Holy gosh, man!
Now if only they made them with a convertible top. Inside joke. Oh! Wait! Okay, toaster, and cowbell for Brother Deacon Asa. Talking about the sheets and towels on sale at Walmart. The Trumpansies are stocking up on their white sheets, Bob. Ta-da! That's high quality.
It's interesting.
Tough crowd. Well, Trumpansies stocking up on their white sheets.
I got it. I thought it was funny. But... Bob, I wanted to ask you about this Wisconsin, Pittsburgh, Michigan voter fraud thing. Now, we all knew that if Hillary would have won and Trump would have come out and said fraud, we would all have been, you know, looking at him and laughing. And I don't know, do we really want to go down that road, or is it that narrow of a margin? Or,
well, I mean, it's for a state the size of Wisconsin. It's less than 23,000 votes separate her and Trump.
Right. And it's like 30,000 disenfranchised, so it may be worth looking into.
Look, sooner or later, if we actually want to persist in this notion that we have, that there's anything vaguely democratic about this country, we're going to have to address the issues we have with voting. Voting is really not that hard. Okay, I mean, the archaeologists have dug up little tiny broken pieces of pottery in Athens with names like Pericles scratched into it, where the Athenian democracy would vote which person they wanted to throw out of the city-state that year. I mean, we get the word ostracized from that because that little piece of broken pottery in Greek is an ostracon.
Yeah.
And so to be ostracized was to have your name scratched on a piece of broken pottery, and you throw it in a basket, and they count out, and whoever gets the most votes gets thrown out of the city. I mean, pretty simple, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean,
and we can't do it.
We can't count.
No, it's not that we can't count. It's that because capitalism. Somebody has to be able to make money on our elections. I mean, for instance, there's a
Diebold.
Well, yeah, but it's not just that. I mean, there's a printing company over in Spencer, West Virginia, that has a contract to print ballots. And that's a big part of their business. Because capitalism. But I'd rather have somebody making money printing ballots than making money off of video game voting machines. I mean, my God, one of the first people I ever interviewed when I got back into this business was Brad Friedman in 2004.
Yep.
Talking about the irregularities in all this electronic voting. And Go ahead. No, you.
Is that the guy that wears the derby hat that was on Mike's show not too long ago, or am I confused?
No, it's a fedora, and that's Greg Palast.
Okay, I'm sorry.
That's okay. But no, Brad is an absolute. He's a clearinghouse. He's a one man clearinghouse of voting irregularities. And it's all, you know, it's all out there. And that's why I found it particularly annoying when the guy at National Petroleum Radio said, "Wow, this couldn't possibly be a problem in America now, could it, Bill?" And Bill from the Daily Beast said, "Why, my stars and garters, no, because freedom."
Bob, I heard Brad's show last week. And I think Monday or Tuesday of last week, he was talking about Wisconsin. There are places where more votes were cast for president than votes were cast.
Yeah.
There were three different precincts.
Yeah, I saw the tally ticket for one of them.
Right. And then when people challenged it, they went through and revised the number of people who'd voted without actually showing the ballots.
See, they made it all better.
Right. But, yeah, he's fully in favor of them. He doesn't call it a recount. He calls it a count. That we haven't counted the first time, so we can't call it a recount.
That's probably true. Ron and Raleigh notes... Echoing.
All right, I'll mute.
Ron and Raleigh notes there was a 5-point swing in Wisconsin from the exit polls to actual count. Similar discrepancies in Pennsylvania, North Carolina, and Florida. All of them accrued to Donald Trump. And that was the thing that the National Petroleum Radio guys were saying. Well, no, what this really is, it's not that there's any irregularities in the vote. It's just that this is a historic upset. Now, what vested interest did National Petroleum Radio have in trying to poo-poo the idea that we have problems voting in this country? I mean, there was nothing objective, there was nothing journalistic in those statements that were made this evening as I went to town and back. All the other countries seem capable, all the other developed countries seem capable of voting without everything just going to hell.
Yeah, but they're also capable of doing things like providing health care for their citizens.
Okay, you got me there. But it just seems weird. And it seems like we're really not serious about it, about getting it right. We're okay with this the way it is. And, of course, one side is always going to be okay with it because, you know, Republicans do well when people don't vote.
Hey, Bob.
Yeah.
One thing that really has bugged me, especially since Reagan, we got a whole populace that's been taught taxes are bad. They're pinching money from your pockets because, well, they're taking money away from you. But then people bitch about the roads we have. They maybe they know or don't see the lousy healthcare system we have. They don't remember the times when they grew up in the 50s or the 60s when, you know, things worked pretty well. I mean, you had public transportation, of course, GM and that, you know, ripped up all the trolley cars and that, but still things were pretty good. You get on a bus and get to where you needed at a reasonable time, at a reasonable fare. But our taxes supported everything, and now people refuse to pay taxes. I mean, you got school boards. They fight like hell, and all they do put on signs are, this is a renewal, not a new tax. And just the whole mantra of against taxes, how we pull our money together to provide for each other, make things better, politicians won't do that.
Well, somebody's gonna jump in on that. Is that you, Sparky?
We just passed a couple bond issues out here. One to remodel the classrooms that I went to when I went to high school. There. So the voters here voted to increase their property taxes.
Right, and that's part of the reason that California still works. Now, as has been noted in a couple of articles that I read, you know, your school system is still in trouble because of Proposition whatever it was in 1978 that, you know, did what it
13.
Did. Yeah. But you know, you've got something resembling far more resembling a working infrastructure than most states in the union do. But yeah, I mean, it's the rise of Grover Norquist, Thomas, and his drowned government in a bathtub. It's Ronald Reagan standing there and saying, hey, well, the 9 most dangerous words in the English language, mommy, are, I'm from the government and I'm here to help. Government isn't the solution. Government is the problem. And they have very carefully and very intelligently, I might add, stoked a hatred of government. But the thing is, in order to succeed in that, you have to convince people along the way that they are not part of that. You know, the Constitution begins with we the people for a reason. Because we, the people, are supposed to be the government. And so they successfully traded in the notion of self-government for a notion of government as rulers, not governors. And there's a big difference between being ruled and being governed. One may self-govern, one may not self-rule, if that makes any sense. I mean, you'll have, you know, you'll have concepts like home rule, or, you know, people will say, some colonized place will want to break away from empire, and they'll say we want to engage in self-rule. But I see a distinction between being ruled and being governed. Maybe that's just something that happens in my own mind, but anyway, you slice it, the Republicans created this idea of hatred for collective self-government. And so you've got the libertarians out there with their weirdo little von Mises think tanks and whatever talking about confiscatory taxation. Well, you know, I mean, it's a question that has to be answered. Do we want roads, or do we want to wait for the private sector to decide that that, you know, you need a road? Well, the private sector is only going to respond to wealth pressure. You know, most of that generation is now gone on, but there was a time when electric companies didn't want to build electrical infrastructure in rural America. And consequently, from the FDR administration, we got the REA, the Rural Electrification Act. And because the government said, okay, private sector, you don't want to do it, the government will. And all of a sudden, private sector says, no, we want that money.
Well, we could go back to Akron here. I worked at Goodyear Tire. Now, if you go to Goodyear Tire, you look at a map of Akron, you have a place called Goodyear Heights. You go to Firestone Tire, well, you have the whole Firestone Park area. And basically, the companies, in a sense, they provide the funding, the housing got built, the roads got built, and it's basically just a throwaway right into the factory there. Same thing at Goodyear, just up that hill, a throwaway down for the workers to come to the factories, build the tires. And back around the turn of the century, that's what got done. And, you know what they did is built throwaways right to their factories and back to the neighborhoods. The rest of it, you know, maybe throwaways out of the place and get the stuff to the market, and that's what they provided back in the day.
And maybe we're just not interested in that anymore. I mean, can you imagine, and this has real-world consequences, Thomas, for places like where I live, the internet infrastructure here, as anyone who listens to this program regularly can tell, sucks.
Oh, it's horrible out here too, Bob. In the North Georgia mountains, it's awful. Awful. I've been at 3 megabytes per second for the last 10 years.
Is that up or down?
That's up. That's pushing it.
We have multiple connections in here because it will not support everything that has to be done here. That's why our bills are the way they are here. But for instance, I'm 10 down, 1 up. On a Frontier business connection.
Okay, well, I'm 3 up, maybe a half down.
No. Your down is always going to be bigger than your up.
Okay, well, scratch that, reverse it. If I'm sending the email, it goes out at that slower rate.
Yeah.
An attachment, yep. So, I mean, this is crazy. I mean, we've got people in third world countries that have faster internet connections than we've got over here.
Oh,
and they don't.
Yeah, well, that, I mean, this is going to sound crazy, but on my phone, I used to play this online first person helicopter combat game. That's how I keep myself nice and pacifistic by working it out, you know, virtually. And there would be dudes in their helicopters in Korea. And I'd be dead at respawn just because my speed couldn't keep up with theirs.
Damn. And you know what? Windstream doesn't care because they have no competition. If you don't like them, well, you don't have any internet.
Yeah, well, they've got no competition and they've got no regulation.
So Google Fiber is supposedly going to have everybody connected on the earth by 2020. At 1,000 megabytes per second. And if they do, and hopefully they will, that should be a game changer.
There's Google Fiber in Austin, but not in my neighborhood yet.
Right. Well, that was the commitment that they have made, whoever the Google.
Well, I mean, see, are. If we believed, and I mean, this goes back to Thomas's thesis. If we believed in the idea of government, for instance, we could have a 21st century Rural Electrification Act for internet. Instead, the government just gives $20 million to the state of West Virginia, and Joe Manchin turns around and gives it to Verizon. Then Verizon bugs out and leaves and takes the money with them. I mean, I am, as the crow flies, I am 1 mile from the CO for the phone company, which means that I can get 10 down and 1 up. Okay, meanwhile, and I know Randy in PA knows this because he monitors the horn stream for me, and he'll send me, you know, he'll send me a note saying, you know, horn stream playing Glockenspiel. Because now understand, we send this stream up. We don't even send this stream at CD quality audio, okay? We send this stream up to the White Rose servers at a crummy 64 kbps.
Wow, that's almost dial-up days, isn't it?
Well, it is. And the connection is so sloppy and so shoddy that even if everything's okay with my computer and my player, and even if everything's okay with the White Rose streaming server, what do I get? I get 3 o'clock in the morning, the stream just buffers up and quits, because Frontier cannot provide me a consistent 64 kbps. Out of the 1 Mbps that I'm paying for on the upside and paying out the nose for every month.
It's not right. Well, I'm not far from the North Georgia College, and they get all the bandwidth they want. In fact, if I ever want to download a hog movie or something, I just go up there. It's about 3 miles from here, sit in the control room, and there's all the bandwidth that you can handle up there. But that's who's getting it all, you know. It follow the money. That's who gets all your bandwidth.
Well, and they're getting paid, and the company is getting paid a hell of a lot more money for providing that big pipe to the college. Now, on the other hand, I've got metered bandwidth here, and it costs out the ass too. But
you can get all you want, probably.
No, I've got it for backup because it's metered.
Okay.
It's metered. But it comes in at 30 down and 15 up. It's fast. For, you know, American standards.
Hell yeah. Oh my goodness.
But I can tell you it would cost something on the order of probably $1,500 a month if I tried to run everything we do here on that connection.
Right. Every day of the week.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. It all falls back to infrastructure.
And it goes back to us having lost any notion of the idea that we collectively are an American people. See, that's one of the great frauds of MAGA, Make America Great Again.
Right. And don't be surprised if Trump doesn't boost the infrastructure. I mean, look what Hitler did with the Autobahn. That's one thing that these clowns can do.
Yeah, that's it. Well, right. And, yeah, okay, so we're going to work on the infrastructure, and we're going to do it at shit wages because we're going to try to figure it, because they'll just do it and declare that Davis-Bacon doesn't apply.
Right.
And I mean, we kind of talked about this.
Who's going to end up paying for it? And when we get so deep in the deficit, just balloons worse than it is now, who's going to get the blame?
Well, now that there's going to be a Republican in the White House, we'll be back to deficits. We'll be back to deficits not mattering again. I mean, you remember when during the Reign of Error, they were driving the deficit through the roof and said
sure,
and you know, setting. I mean, it's like they were setting a leg hold trap for, you know, 4 years later. It just sprang a little bit too quick on them because they were planning on being, you know, well away by the time the economy melted. But, you know, deficits don't matter while they're looting the country.
Well, Bush put the whole Iraq war on the credit card, you know. Obama's the one that came clean with it, and that's why everything looked so ugly on his watch.
Right, but what did the SOBs say once Obama got in office?
Right, look what he did. Look what he did. Worst
Obama's
deficit.
driving the deficit into the trillions of dollars
because he's
giving people he's turned. Remember when Newt Gingrich said we'd turned into a food stamp nation? Damn all those useless eaters out there eating food, and Barack Obama destroying us with the deficit to feed them.
God damn, we're in a hell of a mess, Bob.
Oh, you only think we are now. It's going to get ever so much more fun. Hey, Harold just jumped in. Hey, Harold.
Hello.
Hello, Mr. Harold.
Hello.
Well, welcome aboard to the Secret Open Carry Happy Trails Roundup Society.
Yep, I just got back from the sports bar watching Iowa beat the snot out of Nebraska.
Did they?
40-10.
I'll be damned. How do you like that?
Well, I'm happy about that. I bet my older brother isn't, though. He's a big Nebraska fan.
Corn shuckers.
Got that right.
Well, you know, that's twice now that Iowa's kind of snuck up on somebody.
Yep.
They ruined Michigan's world a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, they wiped their nose.
Well, welcome aboard and go Hawkeyes.
Got that right. How are the Mountaineers doing?
Well, they broke my heart last week, Harold. We had a snow-dusted field in Morgantown. Oklahoma came in. The stadium was packed to the gills, the rafters. I mean, the place was rocking and shaking, and it was 34-0 before we got our chin straps buckled.
Oh, good heavens.
Yeah, it was.
Maybe you had the wrong shoes on.
I keep telling them they really need to put handles on the football, at least for the Mountaineers.
Velcro works.
We drove it down to the 4-yard line, and you know the doofus, the exchange on the snap from center, and of course Oklahoma drove 96 yards and scored.
Well, that's the way it is.
We fumbled the punt the first time that after the first possession. Oklahoma got the ball first, punted away. We fumbled it. They scored. And, you know, it was nationally broadcast on ABC, and, like, by halftime, they were looking for, you know, a Division III game that might even at least be interesting that they could cut away to.
They do that sometimes.
I can't blame them for doing it that time.
Speaking of internet connections, here in the Midwest, the famous Midwest, between the far frozen north and the hot south, I can get 100 down and 3 up. If you want more up, you got to pay more. Yeah, my 100 down cost me $55 a month.
Is that cable?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, cable speeds are generally better. It's just that we had it for a while here. It was less reliable on the upside for maintaining the stream than what this Frontier is. And you know, we have no infrastructure. We've got one of the backbones of the internet up at West Virginia University, but we got no infrastructure.
Well, I agree with you. I think we ought to seize the internet from the internet companies and go public.
Well,
that's never going to happen.
Well, no, because again, you know, that would be communism or something. But by God, I bet if we had a rural internet internetification act, an RIA, I bet the internet providers would straighten up in a real hurry.
Well, but they're trying to do that in Iowa. They've got internet connections between the universities, but that's about as far as it's gone.
Well, Bob, why such a disparity between the 100 up and the 3 down? Well, why such a spread there? Is that a question for Snork to answer?
That's probably Snork's.
That's Snork territory.
Bailiwick. Okay. But I'm
going to bail out of here, and I'm sorry to interrupt. It's just I was curious, you know, as to why there's such a disparity between the two.
Well, most people need down more than they need up.
Absolutely. Because up is just for when you're sending the file, how quick they get it. Is that correct?
Yeah.
And you really have to be sending a lot before you need more than 3.
Well, okay. Yeah. I mean, just as a general example.
Bob, I'd say you'd need 20 up.
Yeah. A 3-hour file of this program is about 86 megs. in size. With the connection I have here, it takes about 25 minutes to upload that. Now, if I use the highfalutin cellular wireless connection, it takes about two.
Your software you're running will also slow you down. For instance, the new Microsoft Office loves to save things to a cloud drive. And if that's happening, your internet is constantly in use for your drive. It can interfere with talking, any other kind of communication you have, especially something like this with the Skype. The little things that eat your bandwidth pretty much take a big toll when they're all put together.
They do, and I try to keep any of that from happening during the program. For instance, when I go to do the upload on the and this is a lot of just technical hooey, but I always maintain a backup on the Horns Dropbox. So I upload each night's program to the Dropbox. I upload each night's program to Podbean, and I upload each night's program to White Rose. That winds up being about an hour's worth of work after the program. But for instance, when I'm uploading to the Dropbox, I'll get notes because I also start the rerun as soon as the program ends usually. And I'll get notes saying, oh, the rerun's buffering real hard. Well, the rerun's buffering real hard because that upload is taking all of the 1 megabyte up to send it, and there's no 64 kbps left over for the poor little stream.
At least with Dropbox, it's when you've selected it. The Microsoft OneDrive, it pretty much does your whole desktop, which means there's all kinds of little conversations every time that you use Outlook or do email, and those are the things that I feel get in the way. I'd rather have something like Dropbox, where it's when you do it on demand, because you physically drop it in your Dropbox or the
right.
Comes in the one, disable the OneDrive. So you can disable the OneDrive and then bring it back?
Yeah, I'm going to have to.
Well, I just got a note from Robert in Australia. He said, don't talk to me about broadband. Uh-oh. Fracking liberal government completely screwed the national broadband network here in Australia. I'm still waiting for it 4 years after they promised to deliver it faster, cheaper, and better. Reports are that it's actually slower than ADSL2+. Some are reporting dial-up speeds. Never let a politician make decisions about technology. Well, there's that side of the coin. On a positive note, I read that SpaceX is planning a worldwide satellite internet with low latency and gigabit speeds. It's basically the same concept as the SatNav setup, except you'll have an internet connection. They're looking at launching satellites around 2020. You know, last week I watched a satellite launch. Aboard, it was from Cape Canaveral, aboard an Atlas rocket, and it was a satellite that is designed to better predict when tornadic conditions are going to form across North America. And I felt that same thrill that I felt as a kid watching the Saturn rockets go up. I mean, it was just a satellite. It didn't have nearly the adventure quotient that the Saturn launches did, the Apollo program. But then, you know, the irony was not lost on me that we were putting up a satellite to help predict tornadoes for people who think God makes tornadoes. We actually spent all these millions of dollars to predict tornadoes for people who hate science. And you know, it struck me that that's a perfect example of the disconnect between, you know, the science-denying right wing of this country, which apparently is something approaching either half or almost half of this country, if you base, you know, base it on, say, election results. 49% of the people in this country don't vote in the last election, and 25% voted for Hillary and 25% voted for Trump. And how long, you know, how long can a culture, how long can a culture survive with that kind of a disconnect?
Well, Bob, this is Thomas. I blame the media because the way they cover it is horse racing, horse race politics, and that, and it's debased the whole political system. I rewatched what was it, Apollo 13 recently. And you go back to the space program, and basically the media got bored with it, and so they stopped covering it. And, you know, there's one little scene in that movie, you go, well, nobody's watching it. Well, the TV networks weren't even covering it. And so, you know, how do we as a culture know what's important if it's never reported? I mean, nobody can have any facts or anything to discern. What should we be concerned with? And the way, you know, they taxes to talk about, and I just watch this whole thing, and the media decides what people talk about in the morning.
But I mean, yeah, the media, sure, but it's education too, Thomas, isn't it? My generation was raised on the Apollo program. And they would wheel the rickety old cart with the rickety old black and white TV into the classroom and plug it up and it was a real production to turn it on so we could watch, you know, a launch.
Yeah, but it goes back to the whole funding of education. There's not the resources and all that, and so it's not done. Now you got this teaching the test and. So everybody's, instead of developing knowledge, you go, okay, let's learn how to take a test. And I don't know, it's not like you're going to a library like when I was a kid and checking out books because yeah, I want to read that and I want to read that. And go home and you'd read. But something's not the same. You used to have to go up to Rex Humbard's place and have the Cleveland Orchestra play for us. When I was in parochial schools, but you got culture and all that. You got exposed to all that. That's not happening anymore.
Actually, Harold, choice reading is the big thing again, where kids self-direct and kids choose the books that they want to read.
Well, as long as they're reading, but. I can't help coming back to our incoming Amway education secretary. Goodbye, Common Core, and all the hissies that were had over Common Core. When you know its primary purpose was to try to catch up with the rest of the world. Instead, we have people having hissies over whether or not cursive is being taught. So, but you know, maybe we forget about that. But yeah, Common Core is going away, and Kellyanne Conway was gloating and trolling the president of the American Federation of Teachers the other day over it. Because I mean that. You know, was it you, Thomas, a minute ago who said, you know, it's going to be, or maybe it was Steve, said it's going to be interesting. I mean, we really have, we've got people in the White House and people in the presidential staff who are internet trolls. The president of AFT, in a perfectly reasonable tweet, said Ms. DeVos will be horrible for education. Because it's true. And for her statement, she got trolled by Kellyanne Conway. I mean, in a way, you know, sometimes this program shapes itself. We've got
We got at least 4 years of middle school White House. And that just fills me with dread.
So, you know, and all we can do is, you know, try to maintain a community like this where, you know, where we can try to process the craziness.
Yeah, personally, I like another option. I see teachers putting in 10 hours of work every day, and I really think that we should go to 4 hours of contact time per teacher and double up on the teachers so that a teacher has 4 hours of the day to be preparing for the next day, not when they're in front of and having to be working with students. We have so many unemployed people that have educations. I just love to see every teacher have a teacher's assistant and relief. Like I said, a morning teacher, an afternoon teacher. The morning teachers in the afternoon would go to a place and work on the lesson plan for the next day. They should be just like anybody else. They shouldn't have two unpaid hours of work, and that's probably an underestimate for many teachers. And I realize there are some that wouldn't put the time in, but I sure would like it to have it be like in college, where the teachers have to spend time out of class preparing to talk to you the next day.
It's not a bad idea. And what, teachers get a planning period during the day?
Yeah, 50% of their time should be planning. Because, and not only that, but teachers get pulled off for so many resources because schools don't have money for hall monitors or whatever. The teachers all have to do it. So they have almost a choreographed list of activities they have prior to school and after school. And that shouldn't be the case. They need, if they're doing the job and planning the job and doing a really good job teaching, means that you must prepare outside of class as well. There's all kinds of things that have to be done, anything from preparing tests or whatever. And during that time, when a teacher's in the classroom, they should only have to be worrying about FaceTime with the children. There shouldn't be any other thing. And when they need to be preparing or doing something else for the children, they should be offline so that we're making the maximum utilization of the time. Also, I think that the contact time with the kids needs to go up. There should be never any homework taken home. It should all be done at school, and I think the number of hours for school for children should be increased. But their activities need to be changed so that it's always interesting to them. That, and I think that there should be 1 hour where they're sitting on a bicycle with a generator powering the school.
Well, I mean, that no homework going home. So that, you're basically talking about the Finnish model, aren't you?
Yes, I am. In fact, I think the exercise is mandatory there as well. And the Finns, I believe, are also going to start collecting their urine to grow crops.
Hey, Harold! Harold, I keep seeing you lighting up. Are you trying to get into the conversation here?
Oh, no, I'm not.
I am.
Oh, okay. Well, go.
So, I've been teaching for 27 years, I think, something like that. When I first started in education, we had a personal planning period that was ours to do with what we want, and we don't have that anymore. Now, on A days at my school and in most places that I know of, on half of the days, that time is planning with your team. What common assessments, common curriculum, how you're going to teach, but it's all done individually. And then on the alternate days is either department meetings or other kinds of meetings. And this year I actually give a lot of the professional development, and the teachers resent anything that's more than half of that period. They don't like it at all if I take more than half of that. But in terms of when I'm supposed to grade papers for my class, or when I'm supposed to like make copies or, you know, actually think about what I'm teaching, that's not built in at all anymore. And it was when I started.
And teachers have so many more topics that they have to cover now. They have to get stay competent themselves in modern software, and that changes every day, especially teaching software. It seems like they hardly turn around and they have to learn a new set of objects. I'm going to probably be giving some speeches at a local local high school where my cousin is a teacher. Actually, he's the principal. But and when I was there, you know, I got to see some of the issues that they were going through. But again, we have like 10 million people with college educations that are unemployed. Many of the scientists and engineers that I know have been unemployed for at least 2 years. And we're going into a period where there's going to be less public spending and research and development now.
Hey, Snork, where did they go unemployed from?
Well,
can we say that? I mean, can we make any sort of majority statement about that?
95% of those who were in manufacturing are out. Long-term unemployed, or many that I know have switched over to careers like insurance sales. I don't know what's happened to the some of the life sciences engineers from NASA. I know a molecular biologist from Fort Detrick is unemployed. Well, actually, he's working at Amazon stuffing boxes. I know another molecular chemist that had to go to Italy to take a job. I know bench chemists that teach one class, you know, just 1 hour a week at community colleges. Most of them are just scraping to get by.
Well, I mean, when you say manufacturing, are you talking about the automotive industry?
You can name the industry, and it's been hit. When I got out of school, I was in computers. I designed a couple of factories for building computers. I would go in and analyze other factories, and every factory that I've been at is gone, basically. Everything except for the big auto assembly plants. And my feeling is auto assembly plants is we should have got rid of the assembly plants and kept the component plants. Because there's one plant with 1,500 people for assembling a car. There's 27,000 plants that have 600 people each to make the parts.
I know that Trump has already taken credit for stopping the movement of an assembly plant to Mexico that was never going to be sent there in the first place.
Yeah, so, the automotive industry probably just laughs at that.
But we spend so much time educationally. Let me throw in here because the president and CEO of the Secret Open Carry Happy Trails Roundup Society is with us this evening. We have $165 to go to match Harold's Secret Open Carry Happy Trails Roundup Society contribution for this evening. So $165 to go. It would be great if we did that.
I bet it. Oh, sorry.
I was gonna follow up by saying we constantly harp on the idea that the most important thing we can possibly teach is so-called STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math, because mm-hmm. Nobody needs to know how to write the language. Nobody needs to know social sciences. Nobody needs to know history. We're just going to live in this engineering sort of vacuum. But you're telling me, Snork, that there are well-qualified engineers right now who, as you just said, are stuffing boxes at Amazon.
Yeah. Once you get 40, you're no longer wanted. They want to either get in a H-1B or they want to get in somebody fresh out of college. And still, they're... It used to be that factories mostly sold to other factories. you'd sell your parts. You'd sell your paper to get used. And most of those things aren't used in the United States anymore. So it's complete collapse of of the entire feed system in industry. I lost count of how many factories I've been at that have been offshored.
You're opening up a whole line of inquiry here, though, that ties in with what we heard, especially from the Sanders campaign during the primaries, that you've got a lot of young people who are coming out of college with crippling amounts of student debt and can't find work in their fields.
Yeah. My wife died still owing $300 on her student loans.
Jesus.
The myth that we have a shortage of engineering is just awful. We have tons of people that at minimum they should be being used as teachers. I know not everyone is a good teacher, but even like I said with my cousin, just going into a school, they thought it was a great help having an engineer go in and actually talk to their science classes as to what you'd really do in the field. But we have a lot of issues that are being ignored that engineers could be put on something like a WA system or WPA system where they're out there doing public good instead of just being unemployed or trying to find other work. And I automotive industry, electronics industry, I worked in the defense industry. You know, we even outsource a lot of our really high-tech defense items now.
Yeah, well, I remember a friend of mine who was a very astute observer, and this was a conversation we had years ago. And he said, there was the difference between pre-World War II and now is that we had a bunch of idled factories that could be repurposed in the event of a national emergency.
Mm-hmm.
And he said that's how the United States was able to ramp up industrial production and basically support the industrial production of the entirety of the Allied war effort. I mean, not yes, the entirety, that, but you get the idea.
That ended during the Reagan administration, and it almost bankrupt Iowa because 25% of John Deere's income and Caterpillar's was to keep their factories in a war-ready mode, where in 48 hours it could be switched over to making some type of war or related item.
Right, and my buddy's observation was that if it came to something like that again, we're done. We can't do it. You know, there's a big difference between an idled factory and a gone factory.
And we're losing the knowledge of what is necessary to set up a factory. I mean, I was the young guy when we were setting up factories. And now I'm 56. I never trained anybody past me. So, most of the other engineers I knew that would be training people would have been older. Many are dead or retired. So we need to turn around, and we need to turn around fast, or the people who are going to be able to pass on the knowledge won't be here anymore to pass it on.
Well, and anthropologically speaking, technologies that aren't used become lost. I mean, you know, every year there's a new archaeological experiment on how did the fill in the blank Egyptians, Mayans, what have you, move all those stones all that way, you know, with no and you know no hard metal technology.
Now if you get into high tech, it's even worse.
Or, you know, how did they raise those giant obelisks? And since Agnes and I have been binge watching Black Sails, we were talking last night or maybe the night before, and I said, you know, in large part, the technology for building those massive sailing ships is gone. I mean, it's literally a matter of reinventing the technology. And you're talking about the very same thing.
Yes.
Somewhere along the way, that puts us in a real bind, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. You got to remember the wires that are running between the little components inside your computer are 18 one millionths of a millimeter wide. Light is too wide to expose those. they have to use x-rays. And little facts like that, and what has to be done to manipulate, little chemicals that have to be done, how do you place things? All of that knowledge is getting lost every day.
And, you know, some of this goes all the way back to the difference between a so-called pre-literate society and an illiterate society, or what I call a memory-based society versus a, you know, a document society. There seems to be, in the realm of cognitive science, at least what I've read, there seems to be agreement that pre-literate societies had much better memories than we have.
Yes. Also, a lot of things that technology is necessary to make something were passed on in a factory. You wouldn't want to write them down because you wouldn't want your competitors to have that information. Well, we basically gave that information away when we moved the factories overseas and taught them how to set them up. We won't be able to move them back unless somebody comes back here and teaches us how to set them back up again. It was a very foolish thing to do to let the technologies go in the first place.
And, of course, this all wraps into, and I don't have any problem with saying it, you know, A pox upon Bill Clinton for giving most faith. You know, NAFTA, okay, I understand, but there's also some, you know. But the thing that probably harmed us most was not NAFTA. It was giving permanent most favored nation trading status to China, because that's what opened up the door for most of our manufacturing to leave to go there. And let's remember that it's not just Bill Clinton, but of course he is the devil's husband. But remember George H.W. Bush, Pappy Bush's brother Prescott, his big brother Prescott, was the president of the U.S. China Chamber of Commerce, and he beat hammer and tongs on most favored nation trading permanent status for China. You know, we are the author of our own demise in that regard. Let me share a couple of emails real quick. Speaking of China, Steve writes in, going back to the Finnish model we were talking about earlier. Bob, the Finnish students don't face the daily fear of shootings either. They aren't put in handcuffs and knocked to the ground and bullied or assaulted by the police. They don't study in war zones. You're forgetting where you live. Yes? Yes. I mean, where your fellow citizens live, even if you're lucky enough to live somewhere else? No, I did, and no, I don't, but I get that. As far as the electoral stuff, Steve also said, we can break away from the old boys' club of the Electoral College anytime we want to. Tolerance and tradition are one thing, but what can be more obviously wrong-headed than refusing to count the votes of those who cast them? Worrying about the political acumen or insight of the typical voter isn't an excuse either. May as well require an IQ test at the polling place and pass the death skull pins out at the exit. But it is going to be women, not men, who demand the abolition of a system that, no surprise here, absconds with their rights while often pretending to support their collective cause. For now, we've got the biggest boy of them all, and he's not about to let a real woman into his tawdry circle. So, a lot of truth there. Tracy just disappeared.
Yeah, we missed out on the trip report.
Ah, because I was coming to her straight away. But dang it!
Mentioned something in the chat there, maybe where she could have seen it. I think she's going on a graveyard tour tonight, and I know that.
Wait, a what? Where? Who? Huh?
Don't ask me. Who'd you go see in San Diego?
Well,
graveyard, or maybe on Coronado Island. I don't know.
Wow. Okay.
Because did you see her video today?
No, I didn't.
She was on a tour thing to go over to Coronado Island, and she took a video going over the bridge and looking back at San Diego, and then going to driving down to the Coronado area, and somebody was talking about history of it.
You know, that sounds fun. So she's on the road.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Maybe this is just one of those transitional moments, but the conversation got pretty interesting pretty quick, as Friday on the Front Porch so often does.
I just wanted to mention my biggest problem anymore, being retired from the construction industry. I dream it now. It's something that just bugs the shit out of me some mornings when I wake up.
What, just because you're still reliving it in your sleep?
No, I'm on a job site somewhere doing something, and something happens, or I lose my tools, or I'm talking to somebody, or it's just something. I mean, you know, 20 years of running construction projects, it doesn't go away from your brain.
You don't have those dreams where you're trying to run the construction project naked, right?
No, not that. No, not none of those.
Well, the route that I think we need to do to get our own country back on, of course, I'd love to see WAPA projects. I'd want to see the government to be the employer of last resort for people who want to work. But I also feel that we need to restructure our trade deals. And the main one is any company that I've ever been with, if they can get a contract with the Pentagon, they will jump through any hoop. If you say that everybody has to have one white sock in your company in order to get eligibility to sell something to the Pentagon, they will do everything they can do to make sure that every employee has one white sock on. I see them change brands of cars, change what clothes they wear, anything when they try to sell to the Pentagon. So I really think that, and right now, a large portion of our Pentagon sales are from overseas. We sell more cars than any other purchaser is sold to the Pentagon. More pencils, more paper. You just name something. Bacon. It's probably purchased more by the Pentagon than anybody else. They spend $400 or $500 billion a year on the books, on items. So if we make a statement that says, in order to be eligible to sell to the Pentagon from another country, that you must have trade equity with us, which means that you can't be selling us five times as much as what you're buying from us, you will see those countries immediately start mandating that they're buying from factories, and you will see factories suddenly placed in the United States just to make sure that they can make that equity. If you say that certain items have to be made in the United States for the Pentagon, you will see those factories come back. And personally, I think that there should be one company, and this used to actually be the real rule, that there had to be at least one company for every component made in an aircraft to be sold to the government, to ensure that if we had an argument or a falling out with another country, that we could make whatever that aircraft was or supply the parts for it. And the same was true of guns. The same was true of radios, that if it was a defense important product, they could buy from overseas, but there had to be at least one factory doing it here in the United States. Yeah, and I think that would give us a 5-year course. It takes a couple of years to build a factory. It takes a good 5 years to completely get everything running right in a factory. And I think they would be very quick to move back if we made that kind of law, which is not possible under TPP or NAFTA.
Well, I remember sitting in a seminar, lecture, meeting, whatever, regarding Chinese trade, and one of the things that was put forward in all of those agreements was that if, let's say, Firestone wanted to build a factory in China, they had to turn over every bit of the technology that they were going to use so that it could be replicated by the Chinese.
That's true.
And there was like some sort of a 5-year window, and at the way it was described, at the end of the 5 years, the Chinese planned to simply put the Firestone factory out of business.
You've ever seen those helmets that welders use that go dark automatically?
Yeah.
I know the inventor. He opened a factory in China, and not too long afterwards, he had competitors. Now you see knockoffs of really cheap ones all over the place. Really hurt him financially.
What's the big Chinese brand? You see them in Walmart all the time now. Haier, Haier.
Yes. Yeah. Haier.
Yeah. That's it. Yeah. And
yeah, refrigerators,
air conditioners.
Basically, all stolen from some other manufacturer.
But when Trump says, it grates on me the way we're making America great again. It grates on me the way he says, China, we're going to get tough with China. Well, he has no way, honest to God, though, he has no way of getting tough with China, does he?
No. Right now, we're basically a hostage to our own purchases. If China cut us off, we only have supplies to last us several weeks of many technological items. And then we would start going to severe shortage of things that we need to do for our everyday life and don't even realize it. Anymore right now, the United States have probably run out of light bulbs within a month.
Well,
they've got the leverage. We don't.
Not to turn this into, you know, the Alex Jones apocalypse report or anything, or get all George Norrie. I've seen it reported in a number of places that, the average American city has 2 weeks of food in it.
That might not be too bad. About right. Produce, we probably only have a few days worth.
Well, and so, you know, because I did take y'all's advice and I went and watched, what was that film, A Day Without a Mexican? And yeah, it was fictionalized, of course, but where are all those economically anxious, Alabamians and Pennsylvanians and who want to go and pick lettuce? Because I don't think they exist.
Yeah, we had the people. They were treated so poorly, they left the states that they needed to pick things in.
You know, they don't.
So,
yeah, go ahead, Steve.
By that logic, in 2 weeks, when the supply line melts down, we're looking at anarchy. I mean, am I being that apoplectic when I say that?
No, you're not. I mean, that's people don't take kindly to not being able to eat, especially when they are spoiled, rotten Americans.
That's disturbing, Bob. It's really disturbing.
I mean, and some of that, look, I kind of live. See, we're all going to get to watch West Virginia go to hell. And because, you know, Appalachia has long been a sort of canary in the coal mine, pun thoroughly intended, for the rest of the country. I had that story a couple of weeks ago about the grocery store in Grantsville, West Virginia, that can't keep food on its shelves anymore because it can't afford to pay for the groceries, because people can't afford to buy the groceries from them. Now, we haven't seen that kind of shit since the Great Depression.
And when my
grandfather ran a little country store and learned to hate Republicans because they destroyed him. Because he kept his store open and kept giving people goods on credit for as long as he could get goods on credit to give them on credit. And then when the collapse finally happened, it took the people in his community and it took him. And there were far too many millionaires on ledges on Wall Street. Far too few, I should say. That's a myth. You know, the wealth class in this country came out of the Great Depression just fine. But it played hell on ordinary people. Now, consider this. In the same county, Agnes showed me this story. In the same county where they can't, where the grocery store can't get groceries anymore, the West Virginia State Police, okay, these are the most competent, highly trained police officers in the state. And yes, there's lots of problems with the police. We got, but you don't want to live in a policeless world, I don't think.
No.
So the West Virginia State Police just announced that they're leaving Calhoun County, West Virginia. They're closing down their detachment in Grantsville. They're also closing down their detachment in Elizabeth, in Wirt County.
That's so are they going back?
That's disturbing.
The Wild West? Were they going back to the Wild West? I mean,
well, I mean, we can't afford it. We can't afford it. There's no the state's going broke.
So what I hear you saying, Bob, is we could be looking at a Walking Dead scenario minus the zombies within 3 weeks of an infrastructure breakdown. Is that correct?
Some sort of, you know, if there's some sort of major crisis and, you know, you can, you know, that's, I'm changing, you know what, I'm going to change the name of this program to Bob Kincaid, Little Ray of Fucking Sunshine.
Well, I mean, if the electric grid goes down and all that, I mean, it could get really chaotic.
Well, I heard some interview with experts on the issue who say we are at a greater risk of some sort of nuclear weapon detonation attack all over the world right now than we have ever been.
And if hypothetically they can hijack our elections, the electric grid ought to be a piece of cake for them.
But it could be a natural disaster. I know the one that the Discovery Channel loves the most is the super volcano under Yellowstone.
Or the sun magnetic fields, you know. You ever seen that one?
Yeah, but the fact of the matter is, the same predatory sons of bitches who are building the who want to build the Dakota Access Pipeline, that same industry wants to frack in Yellowstone. Now we all already know, and it's beyond dispute. We already know fracking causes earthquakes.
Earthquakes, yes, sir.
Well, if you think of the Yellowstone, and this is really gross, and I apologize, but if you think about the supervolcano under Yellowstone, like a zit. Now, imagine drilling 5,000 feet into Yellowstone and, you know, doing what frackers do, forcing all that those high-pressure toxic fluids and into that. And so scientifically, that can't possibly be a negative toward, you know, the supervolcano. You want to jump in on that one, Snork?
The current magma chamber is, I believe, 50 miles northwest of Yellowstone. You'd find it underneath oil because it bends the surface up and it makes the oil kind of collect. So that kind of geology, if I'm correct, is really attractive to frackers.
Yeah, and I think the zit analogy kind of works.
Yeah, it does, because the areas around it would subside when it releases.
All right, Snork, let me ask you, a whole infrastructure breakdown, how long would it take before we seen total chaos?
I don't know. I would say at least a month.
Oh, boy, that's comforting.
I'll take a good look at Aleppo.
Remember, we used to have a stockpile of 10 years of food for every person in the United States.
Yep.
Ronald Reagan decided that instead of monetary subsidies, that he would break into the reserves and give them out to people that were poor. So we divested in our reserves.
So let's jump over to let me jump over to the stress line real quick. Somebody just, I don't know who it is, just rolled in. Hey, welcome to the front porch.
Hey, Bob, it's Mark calling from Florida.
Hey, Mark.
Happy Thanksgiving, everybody.
And to you as well.
Thank you, Bob. I switched from AT&T to Cricket, and these are the results. I can't hear you, but I presume you're hearing me, Lima Charlie, correct?
Roger that.
Shore up what the engineer said. Just a few years ago, the Marine Corps had a number of people getting killed from mortars. They couldn't figure out why they would detonate once they're dropped to the bottom of the tube. And lo and behold, the mortars were made in the Philippines. So when Americans are told that big government and oversight and regulations are your enemy on the behalf of Wall Street, those are your immediate results. It's no different than Common Core with the intention of privatization of American education. So you could take somebody that could have been an engineer making an honest living that no longer could be an engineer because of H-1B visas, engineering provisions, or for various reasons that people aren't working, and they can't even be teachers now because teachers aren't necessary because everything's been privatized. So I just wanted to, because here's where we're headed. We're going to jump on airplanes, and the person that's sitting in the cockpit was working for Tom McCann, even though Tom McCann's gone now too. So in other words, you could just say, in other words, we're headed to a country to where the Constitution that is always espoused by the right, and people hold up their books, unlike Senator Byrd, who read it and knew it and lived it and believed in it, and had an original copy probably in this. So my point is all of that is bullshit and propaganda, and we're putting Wall Street in charge of society, and when the police are seers and breaks and no longer the Constitution is necessary because they're going to a corrections corporations of America jail for profit, I think in about 20 or 30 years, Republicans will figure this out. I just wanted to make a couple comments, Bob, and I'll get out of here because I can't have a conversation because I can't hear you guys too well, clearly at all, but that Wesley Clark's involved with a group of people heading to the Dakota Pipeline. There's some other big players headed that way, and they'll be there from December 4th through the 7th. Also, would like to say a note about Carrier. Speaking of engineering, isn't it ironic that the 1,200 jobs in Indiana that were headed to Mexico may be staved off over Thanksgiving weekend by Cheeto Jesus? I believe Mike Pence is from Indiana. I think that whole thing was a scam. It was founded on it, kind of ironic. He kept beating the drum about it during their propaganda drives. So, and the other thing is, I think the minute I heard that Gary Johnson could be on all 50 ballots, I realized that the campaign was going to be stolen. So Noam Chomsky was my fourth point, or actually should be my first point. Noam Chomsky was just, the information from the interview was just displayed today. Noam Chomsky has come out and said how much of a mistake it was for anyone, for whatever reason, not to vote for Hillary. So he also suffered the loss of a wife recently, so it's privatization, it's profitization, it's the denouncement of citizenry, it's the loss of democracy. And we're headed to a more vicious world, and President Obama's trying to warn us. So, any case, that's all I got, Bob. I'm sorry, I'll hang up and listen.
Thanks, Mark. Thanks a bunch. I appreciate you calling in, my friend. Take care. Want to take a run at that, anybody?
Well, we're heading toward the end. We might want to see if we can match any more funds.
And I got an announcement, Bob.
Oh, yes?
You want me to do it now on the chat room?
Yeah, go ahead.
Next Thursday, the appearance of the chat room may change to the free edition. That's because the rent runs out on November 30th. And we've decided not to pay for the chat room for when it will be going away in March anyway, because of Firefox will be going to Firefox 25, and we won't be able to do Java. It won't support Java anymore.
And so at some point in time, so it would be economically silly to pay another year for something that's only going to be through March.
Right. We talked about this before, I think.
Yeah. So if I get hold of
it. I could pay for it.
Yeah, I know, but there's no sense in it.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
So if I get hold of John, what do you think of just, you know, taking Greg up on his offer and using the Horn Malloy, or using the Malloy chat room?
Well, we've already been cleared to do that.
So it's just a matter of John putting the code into the website and passing that passing that address around, right?
Yeah, or you just go to MikeMalloy.com and click on chat room.
Well, that true. That too. So I don't know. As of Thursday, you want to sort of take the pulse of the community and just see if we want to start using the Malloy room.
Yeah, we could do that. I mean, it should change to the free chat room like it has in the past.
Right.
When the rent wasn't paid on the due date, and then Lottie had to step in, and Lottie got the code from John Fox, and Lottie gave me the code if we wanted to rescue it.
Has anybody?
John Fox is really busy.
Yeah. Has anybody saved all the personalized emoticons and stuff from the room?
I doubt it. I wouldn't know how to do it.
Nor I. But there's some funny stuff back there. You know, Bob of the Hut and Disco Bob and Disco Peter and, you know, that kind of stuff. That I know people have gotten a kick out of. Well, we'll just play it by ear. And I'll try to, you talk to Greg, I'll talk to Greg, I'll talk to John. You know.
I already talked to Greg.
Yeah, I know, so have I. So, but I mean, just to let him know it's coming.
Well, I already told him it was end of November we were going away.
Yeah. Yeah, that chat room, not us. We're not going away.
Yeah, the Horn chat room as it is in its Java form right now is going away.
Okay. Yeah. All right. We'll play it by ear, right?
Correct.
Okay. Sounds good. $165 to go to match Harold's Secret Open Carry Happy Trails Roundup Society offer for the evening. Thank you, Harold. And hopefully we'll jump in on this and keep it going. Just got a note from Jack in Shreveport. Great front porch tonight. Great bunch of important topics. I can second many of the engineering-related ones, too. And somewhere on that issue, you know, I'll be honest, I hadn't given it that much thought because, you know, in terms of the propaganda, they tell us, well, you know, engineers always, you know, those are the best jobs in the world and the highest paying jobs in the world, and everybody wants an engineering job. Not so much, right?
It's even worse if you have a post-grad degree.
Sheesh. That's, we've screwed up somewhere along the way, have we not?
Yeah, I remember after Apollo shut down, by the time I got into school, I think about an eighth of my instructors were ex-Apollo project engineers.
And of course, we're gonna whack the hell out of NASA too in the incoming administration, are we not? Because we can't have NASA running around studying climate change because it's a Chinese hoax.
That's not only thing. Anything that might involve finding life on Mars or Titan, those projects will be canned as quick as possible.
And NOAA, don't forget NOAA. They'll probably get their budget near zeroed out.
No, NOAA will get plenty of budget if they build another boat.
Jesus, and you know, those science stories are some of the ones I love the most. I just saw one the other day that there has been a cache of near surface underground water ice identified on Mars, the volume of which, if melted, would equal that of Lake Superior. To be that movie, in a world where water has become precious, that might be important somewhere down the road. But we're probably going to give up on that too, right?
Yeah. I don't know what space program we're going to have anymore, because most Republicans don't view it as helping the United States at all.
And, you know, it's one of those a pox on both their houses kind of things, and we got to get out of here. But on the one hand, Democrats tend to say, well, you know, we need to feed the poor, feed the hungry, house the homeless. You know, we got a lot of things we got to do before we can worry about spacecraft. When NASA's budget is, you know, it's not even a rounding error. And the Republicans aren't interested in doing it unless they can figure out a way to screw some money out of it.
NASA's total budget depends on how much services they can provide to the National Reconnaissance Organization.
Pretty much. Office. All right, guys, we got to get out of here. It's been a most enjoyable Friday on the front porch. Y'all take care. Have a wonderful weekend. Thanks, everybody, for all your support of this program. Hopefully, that'll continue to roll in over the weekend, and we'll have a happy day celebrating the Swede beating that we hope to deliver at the end of this month for the 11th month running. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And thank you, Sparky, for once again hosting the Horn Malloy Skype chat group. Let me ask real quick. Will it be going on post Malloy? Do we know?
I'll see what happens.
Okay, sounds good. All right, have a great weekend, everybody. Thanks a bunch. Talk to you soon. Banana pudding, dressing, banana pudding, dressing. It's what I'm thinking about now. It's only hours away. Take care, y'all. Good night.